Alright. So we were on page 16, discussing James chapter 4. We'd finished looking at... No, we weren't finished, but we were still in the... still in the middle of this, some of the problems, the issues they had. We looked at, they had these, pride was driving these battles and fights amongst themselves, this envy and lust, desire for, envy for, we were saying that the masters or teachers, they're envying for a position amongst themselves, leading to conflict and contentions. And I wanted to take a look at it, beginning in verse 4 and following there. He accuses them. I'll go ahead and just read it. After accusing them of, serving their lusts and desires, he said, "Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enemy and enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you think that the scriptures say in vain, 'The spirit who dwells in us yearns jealously'? But he gives more grace, therefore he says, God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble." And so he calls them adulterers and adulteresses. In what sense is he accusing them of that?
He explains that when he says friendship with the world, so no longer considering God as ultimate.
Yes, it's not here talking about accusing them of physical adultery, betraying the relationship and the marital relationship. He clarifies that with regard to enmity with God and their love of the world. I wanted to also look at 1 John 2:15. John 2:15 and 17. Someone want to read that for me, please?
"Do not love the world nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but it is from the world. The world is passing away and also its lust, but the one who does the will of God lives forever."
Thank you. I also want to go back to Ezekiel. I have Ezekiel here, Ezekiel 16. Where this is another case. Ezekiel's preaching to the Israelites. And as you see a direct correlation using the same terminology here. I'm just going to read some of it. Let's see. What bit am I going to read? Specifically, verse 8 through 17, and I'm not going to read that first bit, but basically in 8 through 13 or so, talks of this discussing? Yeah, Ezekiel 16. He's discussing how God chose the Israelites, adorned them. The idea of God as the husband and the Israelites as the bride. And he adorns them with beautiful clothes and picks them up and makes something of them. And then in 15, let's see, 14, "Your fame went out among the nations because of your beauty, for it was perfect through my splendor, which I had bestowed on you, says the Lord God. But you trusted in your own beauty, played the harlot because of your fame, and poured out your harlotry on everyone passing by who would have it. You took some of your garments and adorned multicolored high places for yourself and played the harlot on them. Such things should not happen nor be. You have also taken your beautiful jewelry from my gold and my silver, which I have given you, and made for yourself male images and played the harlot with them." And so, God was on the right track. Here he's discussing the, in Ezekiel, they're actually no longer worshiping God, they're worshiping heathen images. And they've drawn up this sense of the violation of the relationship compared to husband and wife. And I think that's what he's saying here again in James. Not in James. There we go. You know, he calls them adulterers and adulteresses, and accusing them of what?
When you have a relationship with God, you can't have a relationship with the world. Just like if you have a relationship with, you know, your spouse, you can't have that same relationship with someone else. And that's what he's accusing them of doing, is trying to have a relationship with the world, but also have a relationship with Him.
Yeah, exactly so. They're trying to play, they have a love of the world, and he's telling them, you can't love the world and love God, just as we've seen in 1 John. And we've already looked at, you know, this what the root cause was of a lot of their issues. Well, it was pride, and that also was mentioned in 1 John, that, you know, the pride there, it's the pride of life, but here is this pride, desire to be, you know, the preeminence amongst themselves, and it's causing all these disturbances. And of course, you know, when we look at as teachers, as masters, you know, they spoke of their desire for their position, but is that what it is to be a teacher, a master? I got to be the top dog now. And what was the purpose of a teacher within the church? What does that purpose serve?
To edify others.
Yeah, to edify others. It's service for the edification, for the betterment of those around you, not for lording it over people. I don't know if that's what they were doing, but they certainly had their own base desires in play when they're trying to work their way to the top. It's not a, you know, they were looking at self, and they should be looking at those they can serve. And so, in 6 through 10, they're given the resolution how to resolve and correct these problems, and then also what the result of that would be if implemented. I'll go ahead and read 6 through 10, and then y'all can answer it for me. In 6, but he gives more grace, therefore, he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, submit to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Lament and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and He will lift you up.
Repent and do right, you know, and submit to God, listen to God instead of yourself. Glorify Him with your life and not yourself.
Yeah, and the important part there is submitting to God, right? That is the opposite of pride. Their problem is pride, but they've got to submit to God. They can't be prideful. Then that's, you know, the idea of they need to humble themselves. And yeah, that's what they need to do. And what's the result if they do it? I don't know if you might have already said it.
The devil will flee from them. Yeah. They will not as easily fall. If they submit to God, then these things will not be a part of their character.
Yeah, the devil will flee from them and not be part of the character. There's some other phrases that are used here that are a result of this that are beneficial.
God will lift you up instead of you trying to lift yourself up.
Yeah, God will lift you up.
Laughter be turned into... Or no, that's the other way around.
Don't draw near to you if you draw near to Him.
Yeah, you can draw near to God if you draw near to Him, he'll draw near to you. And what becomes of your heart?
Purified.
Yeah, our hearts be purified or cleansed. yeah, and of course, part of that getting to that point was the repentance, that the idea of, you know, to mourn, to gloom over their sins, to turn back from that, and then yeah, submit to the will of God. He'll lift you up and draw near to you.
You won't be double-minded. You'll be single-minded. You want to follow God and not have one foot in the world and one foot, you know, trying to serve God.
Yeah, and when I see that double-minded, that we've spoken of you know, as these teachers are striving to be teachers, striving to be leaders or authority, and it's that double-minded aspect that, you know, if someone's striving to be a teacher or a master, that's good. But here, they're doing it for the wrong purpose. They're doing it for self and not for others. And that's why I mentioned that. I see that double-mindedness, that's what it is. It's something that is good, and they're making it, corrupting it, making it bad. Or not making the position bad, but the reason why they're going about with it. Thank you. Any other comments? So it continues on. I sort of made this its own little section, but it's still part of the main... how do you say it? Here's a correlating issue that still is derived from the main issue. And so it's connected to it, but it still is, slightly different. And I broke it apart. But verses 11 through 12, and we're going to read that. But I'll go ahead and start reading it. Who wants to read 11 and 12 for me? I read the last one.
Do not speak against one another, brethren. He who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks against the law and judges the law. So if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge of it. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But who are you who judge your neighbor?
Thank you. Before we look at this, I have some other verses, correlating verses, to help us with context with the harmonizing the scripture. But I have asked the question is, this verse here, 11 through 12, mine says speaking evil of one another, and I know other translations say slightly differently. But is he here condemning, saying something unfavorable about a brother? And if so, why? And if not, what is he trying to get at? I want to look at Matthew 7:15. Here Jesus is teaching his disciples. He tells them, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You'll know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. And a good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor a bad tree bear good fruit. Therefore, by their fruits you will know them. And he's warning them about people who have the appearance of good and then bear bad fruit. Also, Acts 20. Acts 20, being 28. I just skipped reading some of these, but I can't remember which ones are which now. This one bears along the same line as the last one. I'll paraphrase. But basically, there's going to be people coming in doing things they shouldn't. And I guess the point is, I'll go ahead and look at it. It says, therefore, take heed of yourselves and to all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to shepherd the church of God, which he has purchased with his own blood. For I know this, that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. They will also from among yourselves, men will rise up, speaking perverse things to draw away the disciples after them. And I want to look at that verse, showing it's not, outsiders coming in, or unbelievers speaking incorrect things, speaking wrong things, perverse things. It says it's men from amongst you. These are brethren. Are Christians, and then they begin to speak these perverse things. So what's to be done when someone's doing something they shouldn't? 1 Corinthians 1 Corinthians 5:12. Yeah, 5:12. Here's a result of something, action, a result of some, you know, incidents like this. Paul's telling them, "For what have I to do with judging those who are also who are outside? You do not judge those who are inside, but those who are outside, But those who are outside, God judges. Therefore, put away from yourselves the evil person." And so here he's speaking of judging those people that are amongst them, the brethren that are amongst them. And of course, if you're judging them and condemning them for their actions, you know, they're doing something they shouldn't, but you can't use James to say, "Oh, well, we can't say anything bad about somebody." Something, or not, you know, unfavorable. It'd be unfavorable to say something they're doing wrong, you know, that, to call them out on it. So, I'm starting to slip into answering the question. Let me just read the verse. Let's see, 1 John 4:1. I didn't need that one. 1 Timothy. If we had several more classes, we could take the time to read everything and be nice and neat. Mike, did you have a question? Or did your hand just kind of up?
In the chapter, we'll just in 1 Corinthians 5. Talking about judging those within the local church, these that you can see how Paul himself applied a judgment toward this person, mm-hmm. To deliver such a one to Satan in the hopes that in the end he would be saved. There was no speaking evil of that person. There was a judgment, but there was no speaking evil. James is talking about speaking evil against a person. And that speaking evil has a judgment with it.
Yes.
So judgments can be done in a way that's appropriate, in a way that has a discipline to it. The judgment, the speaking evil here in James has no discipline to it. It's just outright somebody just talking evil against somebody.
Correct. And you're on the right path. That's where we're, by looking at the different verses, that's where I'm trying to get to. You know, if you're like in Corinthians, yeah, this person's doing something wrong, and it's brought to the forefront, and then judgment is made of it. And so, you know, they're accusing him of wrongdoing, and some people say, well, that's speaking unfavorably of someone. And yeah, you're right, the case is he's doing it, and then there's judgment here. James, where were they going? James 1:20, it's also another case where judgment was made, where it calls out two men's names that I don't want to pronounce, so I can't, whom I've delivered to Satan that they may learn not to blaspheme. Another case where judgment was made on those who have been blaspheming. And so looking at these verses, and Mike was there, is in James, where he's saying, don't speak evil of one another, is that saying we're not to speak unfavorably of one another, you know, or if, you know, accuse one another of wrongdoing if wrongdoing is done?
I don't know. I can't think of it off the top of my head where it is, you know, but where he talks about, you know, if you have a brother that's doing something wrong, first you go talk to him. You know, you don't go talk to someone else about it first. You know, you confront that person first, and then from there, if they don't want to listen, you take somebody else. You know, I mean, Jesus yeah. told us how we should handle those kinds of things, not just go around saying, oh, this person's doing such and such, you know, and yeah, talking bad about them.
Matthew somewhere. Correct? Yeah, I think we ran across it in one of our past lessons, but I'm not remembering exactly where.
Matthew 18.
That
point is like that. That's the so much of the New Testament that you can't do if you don't step back and do some sort of analysis. People don't like the word judging because that becomes personal. Well, how you go about doing that can become very personal. But as Paul did in 1 Corinthians 5, and Mike was saying, if you just, you speak to the truth, that isn't...
That isn't speaking evil, is it?
It could be if you do it in a... If there's a mannerism around it, but the content itself is not evil. And this chapter 4 of James has got to be something different than just any judgment of any kind anyway, because you have harmonizing issues with the rest of the New Testament thing, like you've taken us to several passages.
So we've established, I think we've established that. The next question was, so how does one unlawfully judge a brother according to this section? How are they speaking evilly of one another, and thus unlawfully judging their brethren, and then thus, getting judged themselves? What's been going on here that we've seen throughout these verses? We've seen back in chapter 3, the dangers of the tongue, where it accuses them of, with God, with your tongue you bless God, and yet you curse men. We see this, in the beginning of chapter 4 here, they're full of lust, they're mentioned several times, full of envy, self-seeking, and it's causing these contentions and these fights. You're probably not really just going fisticuffs. What's happening here? Is there... As I've mentioned before, I believe it's a struggle for preeminence amongst themselves. What do they think is going on here? And then he tells them to stop speaking evilly of one another.
Some of these teachers were probably setting themselves up as the law and not doing righteous judgment and judging the people based on what their thoughts were. Remember Paul earlier, for instance, don't let anybody judge you according to feast days and that kind of thing. There was some Judaizing teachers going around saying you've got to keep all this. And my judgment is talking about making righteous judgment based on what truth is and not what some of these people were proclaiming, setting themselves up as teachers and to make judgments on. That's my approach if it's someone's different.
Kind of digest what you said. I lost my thought.
In their arrogance and pride, we're talking about the teachers, and in their wanting to set themselves up, is that sometimes they would judge their brother according to their standard of what law was or what the truth was, and not on righteous judgment.
Okay, yeah. That may be the case. I wanted to look at 1 Peter. I have in 1 Peter 2 and 12. I'll give this one. Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable amongst the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. And also in verse 16 of chapter 3, says, tells them, having a good conscience, that when they defame you as evildoers, those who revile your good conduct in Christ may be ashamed. See, here's the case where people are, as we call, slanderizing them. They're saying evil things about people, not because they're doing anything evil, because they're so good. They're trying to knock them down, cut them down for whatever purpose, maybe make themselves look better. It doesn't say their purpose here, but they're cutting someone down, throwing false accusations on them to discredit them. when their conduct is honorable. And he's telling them to keep, you know, keep it up. Keep your conduct honorable. So when I see in the 11 and 12 of James, 11 and 12 of James, chapter 4, all this contention, this fighting amongst one another. And then here he's saying, he's telling them, y'all have been speaking evilly of one another. I see it as they've been slandering one another. For what purpose? As we discussed, they're trying to get the preeminence, trying to be, I'm the master, and discrediting one another to set everyone else down, to rise to the top. That's sort of how I see it, looking at the context of this whole group. You know, we see this, there's wars and fights amongst them, and that's how people fight, you know, besides going physical. Using the tongue, you know, discrediting one another, saying things about one another. And I think that's some of what was going on here. And the fact is that they're saying things that aren't true. I assume it's not true. If they're all filled with this envy and whatnot, then maybe they're just being hypocrites and calling out what they see in others, that what they have in themselves as well. And that's where pointing out that, you know, yeah, you're going to, you judge by the law, and you're going to be judged by it as well. And so, maybe that might be also the case too, is they're being hypocritical. Seeing the wrong attitude in the others, in order to promote themselves, they're calling out on them, if that same thing is in them as well. And so, you know, we see this, you're going to be judged. And of course, that's happened amongst brethren, not so much in my lifetime, but, and, you know, a little bit before my lifetime, during the divisions, you know, that occurred back in the 50s and 60s, and some even later, because I do remember one when we were in Colorado where a church split. You know, this, you know, the terms of calling each other aunties, that I'm going to pull from Steve's memory on here. You know, accusing other, you know, people being aunties, and, oh, you hate orphans. You know, people said that we don't have authority to provide for their needs from church funds. And of course, I mean, all of those terms are derogatory and they're slanderous, because accusing someone, oh, you're hating orphans. Do those people really hate orphans? No. Are they really anti against everything? Are we? No, we're anti against breaking the rules. We have the rules to follow, and we're being accused of evil for what is being done is good. And of course, I've heard of other people who don't like the fact that we've read some of these verses where those who are unrepentant violators of the law are removed from the church. And yeah, there's groups of people who think that's unduly harsh. Ah, that's mean. That's what we have is the law. And so when people see things they don't like, they speak against it derogatorily. And that's for good behavior, that's slanderous. Yeah, I already mentioned James 3:9. Has anyone come to that same conclusion that I've drawn? Seems logical. It can fit, and I'm sure if anyone, other thoughts can fit as well, be glad to hear them. Or we can move on. No one's making any comments, so. Alright, and see, that's how that section sort of fits with the rest, that speaking evil of one another, it's all promoted from that still that sense of pride, that, you know, trying to be above everyone else, and yet it's got its own little resolution, I guess. So in 13 through the end of the chapter, he starts to move away from that and goes into discussion on another topic. I'll go ahead and read 13 through 17. It says, come now, you who say today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city and spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. And so, I ask the question, with what awareness should a godly, you know, with respect to these passages, what awareness should a godly believer, how should we live and make our plans?
If the Lord wills.
Yeah, if the Lord wills. And what are we to be aware of when we speak of that?
Well, everything that we do and each day that we live is all by God's will. And we're not guaranteed tomorrow.
Yeah, we're not guaranteed a tomorrow. Life's uncertain, isn't it? And he uses the term, life is but a vapor. You know, he's using some imagery here. You can use different imagery from that, but I think of, you know, like you go out in a cold morning. We don't get many of those. But you go out and you breathe and you're like, ooh, you see a puff of your own breath, vapor. And of course, it hangs in the air for a moment and then it's gone. You know, if that was our life, it's pretty short. And of course, you know, we don't think of our lives that way, but see, we have our own subjective way of time and seeing things, but to God, who's been forever, I mean, our little lives are, even just in our course of our history that we've documented, a generation is a very, very small, short amount of time. You know, our history books go, I don't know how many hundreds of generations back, hundreds and hundreds of generations, thousands of years, we know things. Our life is short. And yeah, with that respect, we need to be aware of the shortness of our lives, the uncertainty of its continuation, and to trust in the will of God. Yeah, Josh.
It seems like a theme of this chapter is emerging with him encouraging them not to seek a high position using, you know, or the wrong ways, telling them not to be a friend of the world. And here, your plans, you need to have your plans in light of nothing takes place unless God wills it to. So, it seems like this letter is really addressing now people's fundamental purpose and their intentions and motivations, and making sure that it's all before God and it's all pure and it's putting God first with, not getting in quarrels, not backbiting, not trying to put your plans beside God or before God. That just seems like what the theme is emerging at. That is starting to see out of this chapter.
Well, it's probably, you're correct. He's discussing all these small issues they've been having, and he's drawing up the bigger picture for them, right? You know, you're doing this and this, and you're thinking about yourself and your lives, your own desires, but here's the bigger picture, the awareness of where we fit into the grand scheme of things. Drawing up that conclusion, and that should help all of us, guide us. That's what we should have every day, is awareness for God, thinking about God, help us, look to him, and if we're being aware of his position, where he is and where we are, we'll be more likely to follow his will, right?
Yeah, it seems like these people's pride are getting in their way, and they're fighting and quarreling. They're becoming friends of the world. They're becoming double-minded, or they're, at risk of being these things. And, they're being prideful. Just what he's talking about over and over again is that this idea of pride and just their motivations and what they're trying to do with their time here, and that they're not as enraptured in their faith in God as they should be. It seems like he's talking to people that are not fully committed.
We've been toe-stepping all around it, so I want to ask the next question. Within these group of verses, what is identified as being evil?
Boasting and arrogance.
Yeah, boasting and our arrogance. You see that arrogance is another form of pride, isn't it? And we see this proudful behavior. Mike, you had a comment?
gets to this expression in verse 15 that the Lord wills, obviously there's a lot that I don't understand about the Lord's will. I don't know, for instance, that, you know, he's expressing his will in the things that go on in our daily life. They were going to go to a city. And so to pray about it, to seek guidance and to go into this city and, you know, do whatever it is they're going to do there, is to do it asking God and mindful of God. I don't know I don't know how God expresses his will if he doesn't want you to do that. For instance, take Sister Wilkinson. She made a car trip. Was it God's will that she not return from that car trip? I don't know that that's what this means. You know, I don't take it to mean that he has, that he exercises that kind of control. I think the will is that there's an overall that God has control of. And I'm not saying that God doesn't have the ability to influence things to work in a certain way. I'm not saying that. And that's where prayer and purpose and so forth can come in. But the attitude of these people, I think, was twofold. And it's expressed in verse 13. One is the prioritization of their time. Your life's a vapor. So what are you going to do with your time? How are you going to spend it? In this case, they were going to go spend it and make a profit. And so the idea was it was for themselves. If you're going to go make a profit, now what are you going to do with the profit? So you spent the time, now what are you going to do with it when you got it? Are you going to spend it on yourself? Are you going to share it? What are you going to do with it? So I think he's sitting in kind of two ways here in this verse. But the idea of the will of God, you know, just how does he exact his will? Certainly he does it through natural events, through the natural course of things. Is he suggesting more than that right here in this verse? I'm hesitant to say that he is. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. I thank you for that clarification.
Well, I don't know if it's clarification. Yeah, well, maybe, but
it's thoughts. it's some additional thoughts. I was taking as sort of the drawing up the bigger picture for you guys. We've been talking about all these little problems in your lives. You've been leading your lives with this attitude, and here's how we need to be thinking. And yeah, I wasn't really going in the direction of, yeah, God's will is guiding every step, but God's will is in play, and we need to be aware of our position within that spectrum, you know, within our position with reference to God and all that we do. So yeah, and we identified, you know, as being evil, that arrogance, that, you know, how we use our time, you know, how we prioritize things, is it for self or for God? You know, here the boasting of their expectations for their future life without perhaps thought of God in that matter. That's what's defined here as evil. So with that context in mind, when we get to verse 17, it says, "For him, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin." You know, that idea, what is the right thing to do, that he tells them, you know, what, contextually, what is that? What is that?
What we know to do. The right thing we know to do.
To live every day with reverence towards God, with the right view of one's life, versus self-reliance and self-serving of the evil. You know, it's depending on God, but it's the right view for the life. You're going to serve God, you're going to serve others. And so they were being self-reliant and self-serving.
Yeah, we see that. The evil is their arrogance, their this non-awareness of God. So the right thing to do is to be aware of God, you know, to live, you know, in an humble manner. To, you know, they're boasting about their future expectations. This arrogance, they're proudful in their lives, And they need to be aware of God and need to be humble. I mean, I believe if you're aware of God and know where He is in things, that is humbling yourself. They need to live humbly with that awareness and with that awareness of how short our lives are. Yeah, if they're going about doing business, seeking profit, you know, for what? When your life is over soon, you know, is that really a priority or the awareness of God?
So, but the bottom line is we don't know, verse 17, if it's applying just to the previous few verses, to the whole chapter, to a major part of the book. It could apply even to the next several verses, which would be fine if it's any of those, because that's a very general but a very powerful statement about there's a responsibility of when you know what's right to follow through with it. It's plain and simple. And whether it's your attitude towards brethren, whether it's your attitude towards God, whether it's attitude towards self, whether it's how you teach in your tongue, whether it's riches, next chapter, I think we're starting to get into the more. These practical lessons now.
Yeah.
I find it difficult. I guess what I'm saying is I find it difficult to say, oh, and now here's a new section. Sometimes we get tied up because there's chapters and verses and indentations which weren't there, and so.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying it's a new section. I think the problem is, of course, as people, we like to break things down into nice small segments.
It makes it easier.
It makes it easier to deal with the issue. And I've kind of gone back and forth. I'm saying, oh, here we're dealing with this particular issue. And here we're dealing with, first part was their pride. And then the second part was judging a brother. And here we're dealing with this. But they're all interlinked, because this is one letter. And this is one man's thoughts going on paper. And they are all interlinked in the sense of, you know, and this is the most general case. Here we're dealing with, there's three specific problems, and what are the causes of all three of these problems? Pride has been involved in all three. He's going along telling them, here's the problems you need to fix, but in all cases, they're linked by the fact that it's stemming from their pride, their arrogance about non-awareness of God, their arrogance and pride in trying to be preeminent amongst their brethren. They cut their brethren down to get that preeminence. At least that's how I see it. Rod is absolutely correct that sometimes I do break it down into little sections, and yet at the same time, it is all still one piece, and that there is thoughts interlinking these other things. Well, you have chapter 5, and I hope you can look at it on your own time. If you have any questions, you can come talk to me anytime. I have a sheet of answers. and I did have you at the end, ask you to, at some point, do the same thing I asked you at the beginning, was to write down what you remember from James, of course, at the beginning, from memory, before we'd studied, and now, after we've studied it, you should have a lot more information, a lot more to write down, and you can kind of look how far you've come. Thank you again, everybody.
Thank you.